Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Jody Kessler, a singer-songwriter who's released 4 CDs. Jody is also an ordained interfaith minister. Welcome to the show, Jody.
Thank you, Tish. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. You know, I want to begin with I find this an interesting fact in your biography. You were an elementary school teacher. You got your master's degree to pursue this career, and then 10 years ago you gave it all up to pursue a career as a performer. Tell us how this happened.
Well, it's interesting how life goes. You really never know what direction your life is really going to take. And for me, I've always wanted to be a singer-songwriter. I think that was a dream that I had ever since I was a young girl in my teens. And I guess I never gave myself permission really to pursue that dream. I never felt that that could be for me. Maybe I didn't have enough confidence to do that. Mm-hmm. And perhaps I just wasn't ready. And while I was teaching, I began to find that songs were appearing. Mm-hmm. And they just came to me, and they were songs that were very much inspired by things I was exploring in my spiritual life. And mm-hmm. people said, you really have to get that music out there.
That's fascinating. And so you weren't somebody who was writing songs as a kid?
I was, actually.
Taking the guitar?
I was. I guess I should backtrack and explain that I had been playing in duos and trios and doing music on the side mm-hmm. For ever since I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. But I guess I never really felt like that could be my full-time work. And so I also loved working with children and thought that I would be good at that. And mm-hmm. so I pursued that as a career. But then this other pull came along, and I felt like I had to follow that calling.
That's fascinating. So when you were discovering that you wanted to use music and start writing, and were you doing that while you were teaching as well, as an exploratory beginning?
Yes. Well, I always did music with children while I was in the classroom. But as far as my writing goes, that was something that was a very personal thing that was developing on my own. And I had been in a band, actually, that was touring and doing the folk circuit before I even started teaching. Uh-huh. And then that band fell apart, and we all went our separate ways. And then I started teaching, and I taught elementary school for 3 years, and I taught preschool as a head teacher of a parent cooperative preschool for 8 years.
Hmm.
But during that time, things were brewing, and I was becoming very inspired by the different spiritual paths that I was attracted to in my life, and that was all coming out in my music.
Mm-hmm. Well, who were you influenced by in regard to writing and singing? Were there influences?
Well, I remember as a young teenager being very influenced by the singer-songwriters that first came onto the pop scene in the early 70s, mm-hmm. like Joni Mitchell uh-huh. and James Taylor and Carole King.
Uh-huh.
I just fell in love with that music. Uh-huh. So they were clearly influences of mine. And even before that, I was also influenced by the music of the early folk groups like Peter, Paul, and Mary mm-hmm. and the Limelighters and the Kingston Trio.
These are obviously, a lot of them are political mm-hmm. groups and political people. Were you involved in politics as well during this era? Were you writing political songs?
Some, not that much. I think the early writing that I did was very much about me and my own, you know, who I was falling in love with, who I was breaking up with. It was that sort
very
of thing.
Very Joni Mitchell.
Yes, yes, very much so. It's really been more recent that I've gotten into writing songs that have to do with certain social and political issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what caused, was there a cause that made you leap into that arena?
Well, I think it's more, rather than a particular cause, particular situations that inspire me. For example, my song The Ballad of Chris and Pat was inspired by a local couple here in Ithaca that wanted to get married, a same-sex couple that wanted to be married and ended up suing the city and the state and the health department and all that for because they had been denied a marriage license. And I was moved by their story, so that came out in a song.
That's terrific. I do want to also ask you, when you decided to quit teaching and pursue a career as a performer, did you ever say, why, what have I done? Did you immediately find a way to make a living?
Well, the living part was a little bit different for me than for most artists, because I was fortunate to have some financial resources put aside that I could have a cushion for myself as I made that transition.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't so much worrying about the money as it was I good enough? Did I have something to offer to the world that would be appreciated?
Uh-huh. So did you pursue performing around town, or was your main pursuit to try to get a CD?
It was both. I had to record the CD in order to put the songs out there, which people were encouraging me to do. And I came out with my first CD in 1996. But then once you come out with a CD, you have to play out a lot in order to promote it and to get it heard and to get people to buy it. And so my radius gradually started getting larger and larger. I started to doing more local performances in cafes and coffee houses and folk clubs, and then gradually started touring all over the Northeast. My focus now is very different, because earlier on in my career, I was doing mainly folk venues, mm-hmm. like the coffee houses and the cafes. But then somebody suggested to me that my music would be well received at churches, mostly progressively minded churches, mm-hmm. like Unitarian churches and Unity and interfaith churches. And so I started pursuing that. I started contacting these churches and asking them if I could play music, be the guest musician for a service that they were having.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing that, and I found that I loved that experience, because there was a pre-assembled audience. I didn't have to run around and put up posters or send out press releases. They were going to show up for church, and they were really
a
listening.
A captive audience.
Right. so to speak, a captive audience. They were listening. They were good about supporting my music, and that they bought CDs. And I didn't have to worry about competition from the cappuccino machine going...
The coffee house dilemma.
Right. And then one day, one of the churches, I believe it was a Unitarian church in Canandaigua, asked me if I would lead the entire Sunday service on a day when their minister was away. And I got excited about that challenge, and I developed a whole program that wove together songs that I had written with a little bit of talking in between to tie them together into a theme, and a guided meditation and a little story for the children and some poetry and things like that. And I wove it together into a whole presentation, and I loved doing that, and it was well received. So I started bringing that to churches all over the place, and which led me to become an interfaith minister.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that a little later in the show. Well, what are some of the challenges still for women in music and women in the creative arts?
Well, let's see.
I've talked to Suede and some of those performers that have come through who are jazz singers, and mm-hmm. and Suede said one of the continuous problem is that they want her to look differently and try to glam up and lose weight, and you know, she can't get a major label to mm-hmm. sign her, even though she's great.
Mm-hmm.
She sounds like Rosemary Clooney, and people have told her that. So have you faced challenges like that, being left out of things because of?
Well, I've kind of steered away from that whole machine, really. But I do think that it does affect me, in that there's that standard that I have always compared myself to. I do it much less now, but in mm-hmm. the beginning, when I first started out, and especially as a young person thinking about whether I could even do something like this, there was always that standard that I had to compare myself to, what the pop stars looked like and what they sounded like mm-hmm. and what their bodies were shaped like and all of that. And I think that affects women very, very deeply, not only as artists, but just as people in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the culture is incredibly pressured women to look a certain way, and it continues, and it hasn't changed. One would have thought that some aspects of the feminist movement would have changed that, but women are still pressured, and women are still anorexic, and so on and so forth.
That's
true. Did you have any formal training as a musician?
Very little. I mostly did it, mostly learned in the folk tradition. I had teachers here and there. I actually had some very good and well-known teachers. I studied with, I took a master class with Paul Simon, and I studied
did
with
you?
Paul Simon's brother at a center called the Guitar Study Center in Manhattan. But mostly I learned a lot just from watching other people, picking things up. I had one teacher that tried to teach me classical for a while when I was younger, but it never really grabbed me. I enjoy classical music, but it was really the folk music that uh-huh. pulled me.
Yeah.
And I did take some music classes at Cornell. I thought I was going to be a music major, and I went to Cornell during the between the junior and senior year of high school, and took a couple of classes during the summer. It was an advanced placement program, and I took two music courses. One was a music history course, and one was a music theory course. And I just bombed out in the music theory course. And so I said, that's it. Music is going to be something I do on my own for pleasure. I'm not going to try to do it for grades anymore. So I went to Ithaca College, and I studied psychology. I didn't study music.
Oh,
I did that on
the psychology of why Jody cracked up during music class, right?
Right.
Do you perform in the schools? Do you still have ties to the schools?
I haven't been doing that as much. Oh, you mean in the colleges?
Or no, in the music, in the elementary
schools.
In
the elementary schools.
Performing and doing any kind of teaching at all?
A little bit here and occasionally, but most of the time, most of my music is focused elsewhere right now. I was in a children's duo for a while, and we went around to schools and libraries and summer camps, and it was great fun. But I just haven't really had the time to pursue that right now. But if someone asks me to, I will.
So you don't think you'll ever go back to teaching full time? This is it, and you're making it, and you love it, and
well. It's not what I plan to do, but like I said before, you never know where life will bring you. And it's not my intention. It's my intention to continue with this music ministry and see where that leads.
Uh-huh. Are you actively writing songs?
Yes, all the time.
Constantly. Do you also write poetry? Do you have a separate entity in that way?
A little bit, but I feel more grounded and confident in my songwriting than I do in my poetry mm-hmm. to as a standalone poetry.
Mm-hmm. And so, and you have political issues that you're interested in. Do you ever write commentaries or letters to the editor? Do you take your writing into any of those kinds of arenas, or is it just songwriting?
Occasionally, mm-hmm. occasionally. I haven't much lately, but yes, a lot of what I believe and what I feel about the world and life comes out in my songs.
That's great. You're listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Jody Kessler. You know what? I want to read some quotes that people have said about you. Sing Out magazine said Jody is a standout writer with a true gift for melody and a way with a tale. And author Stephen Levine has said Jody's music opens the heart we share. Those are really lovely, lovely compliments. On that note, I would really like it if you could sing us a song.
Oh, I'd love to. So this is a song that I wrote as a grace to sing before a meal. And it was very much inspired by the teachings of the Zen, Vietnamese Zen poet, activist, and teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, who talks about how when we look into a plate of food, we can actually feel a connection to the whole universe. It's called Many Hands. On this plate, there are many hands. The hands that sowed the seeds, the hands that plowed the land, the hands that worked the harvest and brought it to the stand. Yes, on this plate are many hands. In this bowl are sun and rain and air, the garden soil and all the tiny creatures that live there. The delicate balance of beings great and small, yes, in this little bowl
In this meal are many hearts and souls. Some may be our families who served it in our bowls. Some may be migrant workers whom we will never know, who can't afford to buy the food they grow.
That was great. I want to move on now to the relatively new aspect of your life, and that was that you received training at the New Seminary in New York City, and you've become an ordained interfaith minister. Tell us about this.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I found that the venues that were most receptive to my music were the churches and spiritual centers. And so I started thinking, well, maybe this is my niche. Maybe this is a place for me that I should be focusing and concentrating on. And I've always been a very interfaith person. I've always been excited about and interested in different spiritual paths and traditions and practices.
Were you brought up in a certain faith?
Actually, that's a good question. I was brought up in a totally non-observant Jewish family.
Ah.
We were completely secular. My mother said to me, Jody, you're Jewish. Don't forget you're Jewish. Don't ever deny you're Jewish. You should be proud to be Jewish. And that's about all she ever said to me about Judaism. Never took me into a synagogue. We never celebrated any of the holidays. I never even knew when they were. And to make things even more confusing, we used to decorate the house with Christmas decorations, and Santa Claus came at Christmas time, and we had the Easter Bunny. So we were actually doing some of the Christian holidays because they were fun, and what we were sort of culturally assimilated into that. So I grew up with really no religious upbringing at all in the Jewish faith, and really not in any other faith. So I was wide open to explore all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was about 18 or so, I started to get interested in meditation and Eastern philosophy and different kinds of Eastern religions. And then a little later on, I started to get interested in earth-based traditions like feminist spirituality, goddess-oriented spirituality. And it all was being woven together into my own blend of spiritual practice.
That's really fascinating. I wanted to ask you, so you were trained at the New Seminary. How does one become trained to be an interfaith minister? Do you have to learn about all these various faiths in order to graduate, I suppose?
Well, this was a 2-year program, and they had classes that met once a month. I was able to do it most of the classes correspondence, since Ithaca is pretty far away from New York City, but I did go down to some of the classes and retreats. And we studied, the whole first year, we studied about comparative religions, about different religions. It was kind of funny, though, because 1 month we'd be studying Hinduism, another month we'd be studying Buddhism, another month it would be Christianity, and then we'd go on to Judaism, and I started to call it the Religion of the Month Club because, I mean, you could spend an entire lifetime on any one of these faiths. So I see it as really a springboard, a very beginning place for me to start my own study, which I think is going to be a lifelong journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first year was a lot of comparative religion work, and the second year was more about creating rituals and ceremonies and learning how to weave it together into a ministry that respects all faiths, honors all faiths, and can create some kind of way to celebrate and honor spirit that is accessible to people of different traditions.
So your website claims that interfaith blends peace and justice issues as well. What do you mean by that? A lot of people would think that has to do with politics.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, I see it as a general respect for human beings and human freedom and human rights. As you know from having written the song Ballad of Chris and Pat, that I'm, you know, support gay rights and the right for people of the same sex to marry. I support, you know, women's rights, women's reproductive rights, I consider myself a person who works for peace, and I'm not that much of an activist mm-hmm. outside of what I do in my music and ministry, just mostly because I just haven't really had the time. But I consider myself a person who is aligned with progressive values.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned at all about the move towards a lack of separation between church and state in this country right now?
Yeah, it is. It is definitely a concern.
Yeah,
definitely a concern.
Yeah, I often ask people questions like that who are getting into religious teachings and spiritual aspects of their life. Well, what other offerings? You do weddings, you do commitment ceremonies. Do people call you, or do you have a special place where they can come and meet with you, or how does that work?
People call me on the phone, and then I can meet with them for those other things. Most of what I have been focusing on right now in my ministry is the leading the services and doing concerts and workshops at various churches. Mostly I take my ministry on the road. I've been going to places all over the Northeast and somewhat in the Southwest as well, to going to different churches and congregations and spiritual fellowships, leading these services that I've put together, and I present different themes, and the churches can choose which theme they want me to present. Mm-hmm. So I'll lead a Sunday service, and maybe I'll do also in the same weekend a workshop and a concert at the church. So I'm not just going a far distance to do one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what my ministry has mostly been consisting of. And in Ithaca, I am going to be starting something brand new, which is what I call the Second Sunday Celebration Circles, which is an interfaith worship service here in Ithaca. And it's going to blend together lots of music and singing, meditation, and a little bit of simple ceremony, simple ritual around a particular theme, as mm-hmm. well as I'll give a little talk, and we'll have poetry and prayers and readings from different traditions. And I'm very excited about starting that. That's going to be...
When is that going to start?
It's going to start this Sunday, May 8th.
Ah.
And it's going to be held at 7 p.m. from 7 to 8:30 at the Santosha Yoga Center, which is over on Brindley Street,
mm-hmm.
over by the Ithaca Grain and Pet Supply.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds really exciting. Have you already gotten inquiries and you know that there's interest out there for this, I assume?
Yeah, I think people have talked to me about wanting to have an interfaith service that is very much what I like to call it, a juicy service, something that's less heady and more about really dropping into the heart.
Uh-huh.
So that's where a lot of music and singing comes in.
Uh-huh. And I also understand that you do workshops. Tell us about mm-hmm. some of the workshops that you offer.
Well, one of the ones that I've been doing quite a bit lately is called Opening to Spirit Through Song. And it's about how we can use song and chant in our lives as a form of prayer and as a way of opening up to spirit as we see spirit, infusing our lives with spirit with the power of song.
Mm-hmm. Has getting into the ministry changed you as a writer at all?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's created a stronger spiritual focus in my life. And whatever is inspiring me is going to come out in my writing. So, yes, it has changed my life a lot in terms of as an artist and also as a person.
I would assume so. So where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years? Do you think you'll ever give up singing totally and just get into the spiritual faith? Do you think you'll get into healing and perhaps those arts?
The singing is at this point in my life, the singing is the vehicle for my spiritual teaching and for my spiritual work. I feel like that's the unique gift that I have to offer. I mean, maybe someday I could do something like write a book or do something different, but right now that seems to be my strongest gift, is being able to write songs that have the power to open people's heart and help them feel more connected to spirit and to reflect on spiritual themes. And so that's what I'm focusing on right now, but I know that as I get older, it may not be something I want to do as much, because one, it's exhausting to be on the road traveling all the time. Mm-hmm. And two, you know, there gets to be a point where someone's voice starts to go. and so I'm not going to...
Are you protecting against that? Are you taking any precautions? Do you take voice lessons? Or?
No, I don't take voice lessons. I just try to take good care of myself in general. But... You know, we all age, and so there's eventually going to be a point where I may not be as strong as a singer. Who knows? You know, I mean, Pete Seeger is still singing.
I was just going to say, your voice is not going to go. Look at some of these people. Roberta Hunter came back out of retirement and started a new career at 90 or something. Don't sell yourself short, Jody. Well, that's terrific. You have been on an incredibly interesting road. I think you probably should write an autobiography sometime. You've taken so many twists and turns to your life and figured out a way to weave it all together, which is quite commendable. And most people end up lost when they try to do all of these things and make it make sense.
Well, thank you. I feel very, very blessed to have found work that I love and work that I'm passionate about. And I'm so grateful for all the people along the way that have been supporting me in that.
How can people get in touch with you?
Well, I have a website, www.jodykessler.com. And that's Jody with a Y, J-O-D-Y, and Kessler with a K, K-E-S-S-L-E-R. And I love it when people come and visit my site. They can hear about, they can see my calendar, see when I'm performing in the area and out of the area, and listen to samples from each of my CDs.
Are you going to be performing? One final question. Are you going to be performing outside of your ministries? Concerts? Anything anywhere?
Yes,
I know I've seen you at Common Ground in the past and so on.
Yes, I still do some of those other venues, and I will be playing in the Ithaca Festival on June 3rd, that's Friday, the Ithaca Festival, on the Commons in the Amphitheater from 7 to 8 p.m., so I hope people will come out to hear that, and I hope the weather cooperates as well.
Oh, yes, the Ithaca weather, it's always iffy. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tish. It's been a pleasure.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We're sponsored by the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. Thanks also to Professor Joe LaQuatra. If you want to talk to us, our email is weos@hws.org. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.